Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley. Well, time to tear off the scab. I've taken too long since doing an episode. I can tell you why, and we'll just cover this on a high level, because what happens sometimes is I suffer from paralysis of analysis, especially when I discover big things. So I'm just going to talk about this on a very high level. In previous episodes, I discussed the idea of discovering that nanoparticles were a big part of medicine, not just adjuvant medicine, not just adjuvants, things like graphene oxide and others. Nanoparticles are a big part of medicine, even as they are a toxic addition to adjuvants. And so upon looking at that possibility, I went down the rabbit's hole and found out that indeed nanoparticles are all over medicine as carriers. So in other words, the idea would be that how well do these drugs really get into the body and where they're supposed to go? Well, honestly, by themselves, maybe not very well. You can find articles that say without carriers, maybe there's not a lot of drug transport, which goes to show you just how unnatural most of our medications are. Because, you know, a natural, healthy situation, a healthy addition to the body, a healthy treatment should be something that the body wants. So it turns out that nanoparticles have been around medicine for a while and are only in more and more medicine. And so I think one of the things I talked about in previous episodes is that, hey, if we know that nanoparticles are tied to autoimmunity, and we do, adjuvants are almost all nanoparticles. And we have articles that say adjuvants are tied to autoimmunity. Then what about natural medications? Well, yes, we have, regular medications and all of their nanoparticle carriers. Well, we have all kinds of medications that are tied to autoimmune. And then the big one, for instance, is that selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, Paxil and other types of antidepressants use carriers in order to allegedly help the drug get into the system. And these are nanoparticle carriers. The problem with these nanoparticles is they're so small they can get past the blood-brain barrier. All of these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors affect the brain directly and do so by unnaturally getting past the blood-brain barrier. This is a bad thing, folks. When you've heard this idea that antidepressants don't help the brain work better, it makes the brain work worse. That is what we're talking about. If you look at all kinds of medications, this is a perfect example. It inhibits this or it inhibits that. It inhibits the natural way the body is supposed to function. But because they're looking at one metric and trying to make the argument that, well, therefore, if we do this, then this must happen. They tie one factor to something they're trying to get and then act like that's the only thing that will result if they change something. So, for instance, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the idea is, what if we, if you will, keep free serotonin? That's not the term, but what if we keep serotonin free for a little bit longer than it would otherwise be free? So it's supposed to be uptaken again by the neurons in a certain cadence. And what selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors do in the brain is to interrupt that cadence. So the idea is, well, supposedly more serotonin means you're happier. So this is a connection they make. Now, I bet you if you looked up the studies, no one even definitely knows that. But that's at least the argument. If there's more serotonin generally, instead of it being re-uptaked into the neurons, then that means that you'd be happier, because supposedly people that are happier have more serotonin. But that's not the same thing as, you know, well, you have more. It's not that more serotonin is produced, it's that more of it lingers. You know, so selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors means more serotonin lingers, but it's in an unnatural cadence. So then, for instance, they find out, oh, so you know what? We didn't even think of this. The fact that serotonin is lingering instead of uptaking at a natural cadence, turns out it has an immune effect. Who knew that serotonin had something to do with immunity? because that's what science does. They look for one metric and they just try to adjust it. And, you know, forget all the other metrics, no matter the complexity of the body. So then you find the studies that say, oh, guess what? SSRAs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, affect the immune response. Now, we're not sure whether it could be that maybe that'll be good because it activates the immune response. Maybe the same people are depressed will have a better immune system, when oftentimes when you're depressed, you have a bad immune system. Or it could be that it activates the immune response too much. The serotonin increases your immune response. And so the articles will say it could be that since it activates the immune system, it leads to autoimmune disease. This is the type of problem that happens when you look at one metric as though that's the end-all, be-all of everything. And so you have autoimmune diseases that are specifically referred to as drug-induced. For instance, there's drug-induced lupus. They talk about this. They talk about one of the major, hold on, let me think of it. It's called a Hashimoto's disease. Let me think of the connection here, just a second. Okay, I remember now. We'll come back to Hashimoto's. But so we've got two problems. We have, well, really more than that, but drug science is always just looking at the argument to make a certain metric that is supposedly related to the desired effect and make that alleged cause move it. And then they say, well, if we move it, it must be that we get our desired effect. And that becomes the argument for the science. And forget all the side effects. Forget whether it creates autoimmune diseases. Now, remember, the other reason for the autoimmune diseases, which is so huge, and this is why I just had to step back. Like, this is one of the biggest things I've understood. This is bigger than the glyphosate problem, which was my previous giant episode, is that all these nanoparticles are a foreign substance that the body does not want. The body immediately wants to identify it and get it away. All of these nanoparticles. And now, in order to, quote, deliver and transport drugs, they are used even in oral prescription drugs. Whether or not they're an over-the-counter, I'm not certain. So we have nanoparticles that the body does not want. And the more it's able to get around the body's defenses, that is how they measure whether they like the carrier. They will adjust the surface properties of nanoparticles to make them, quote, more effective drug transport, drug carriers. And what it really means is the body can deal with them even less. An example is this. A nanoparticle by itself in blood serum always results in a biological corona being put around it. The blood, for whatever reason, it's the way it identifies, it's what it does with it. It puts a lipid biological corona around it. Sound familiar, by the way? Nanoparticles are on the scale of viruses, but that's a separate argument we're not making right now. Also, graphene oxide is used all over. It is in powder form. So isn't that great? So it can easily be put into or kind of stay suspended in the air. And you can easily breathe it in. So that's wonderful. But remember, the less the body can deal with it, when we put it in the context of a drug carrier, the better it is, quote unquote. But if it's not in the context of a drug carrier, if it's in the context of a general pollutant, well, it's really, really awful that it gets into the body. So which one is it? Is it a very, very toxic thing that is totally undesirous of being in the body and is a general toxicological disaster to the environment? Or is it a good thing? Well, the truth of the matter is it's always a toxicological disaster. It's just that we are now purposely putting it into humans as a drug carrier. So when these things are put into blood, these nanoparticles, you can see results on this both as adjuvants and as drug carriers, I believe, but certainly just those studies that just look at nanoparticles, they will say the blood, human blood or whatever, naturally puts a biological corona around there. Now, what could be done with that? any number of things. Maybe the body's going, this is marked as trash, take it out when you have a chance. Please, macrophages, surround it, engulf it, take it out, it's trash, take it out when you have a chance. It could be marked in any number of ways. And instead, remember I said, well, which is it? Is it a horrible toxicological disaster? Or is it a good thing that the body can't deal with this toxin? And the answer is, sometimes when that's their argument, it's a good thing. And so to make it an even better thing, they will put it in biological serum, but outside of the body, that is blood. But they'll make the blood weaker so that the biological corona around it is, it fills all the positions. It's complete. It now has a biological corona, but it doesn't have all the markers and all the characteristics it would have on it if it were put in blood to begin with. And therefore, the body doesn't deal with it in the way it would if it was put in healthy blood. So literally, to get around the body dealing with this well, they put it in junk serum, junk blood, without all the good characteristics. And then when they put it in the body, it already has a biological lipid corona around it. Sound familiar? Messenger RNA, quote, vaccine. By the way, also, this is big. I mean, you have to look it up. This is all based on journal articles. 99% of it is me interpreting journal articles, not just going to Joe's Conspiracy Corner. None of the stuff I'm talking about is a Joe's Conspiracy Corner website or anything. None of it. This had happened before, and it's something else I want to uncover, is that how often has it happened in history that just a new approach to dealing with viruses is now just called a, quote, vaccine? Well, that's what's happening now, because prior to this idea being a, quote, vaccine, you know what you can find? Medicines, quote, medicines with RNA involved being put on a nanomaterial carrier and then being called like RNA treatment, messenger RNA treatment or RNA treatment. Is put on a nanolipid carrier. Guess what happens when you do that? You get a biological corona around it. Now, what do we call the messenger RNA, quote, vaccine? We say it's messenger RNA inside a nanolipid. Well, it's only nano because the size of the particle is nano. And so we get a lipid layer around the thing. So basically, the classic story is for this messenger RNA is it's protected by a lipid layer, and then the body can deliver it easier. So these nanoparticles are always toxic. It's just a matter of how well your body deals with it. The ones that are the worst, to tie this back to autoimmunity, are the ones that end up connecting to your cells in too tight of a way. You will see these articles talking about how, oh, the aluminum and adjuvants are worse, can potentially provide an autoimmunity. Because remember, I've told you, there are articles called Adjuvants and Autoimmunity. This isn't Joe's Conspiracy Corner. This is when they talk honestly about the subject, when they're just talking in their own little spaces. They will say, yeah, so adjuvants contribute to autoimmunity. How about that? Here's how some of that works. And instead of it just being that it's an aluminum adjuvant, the bigger point is not that it's an aluminum adjuvant. It's that it's a nanoparticle aluminum adjuvant. And because it's nanoparticle, it ties to the cells in a way that regular aluminum, organic aluminum, would not. And because it binds to those cells in such a strong way, the body cannot tell self from other. It just sees a human cell with a bad thing attached to it. That's the aluminum adjuvant that binds tightly. And so it does not know self from other. That is the basis for the autoimmune problem with these adjuvants that are nanoparticle based. These things are unnaturally small. They tie to the human cells too tightly. They don't get flushed as easily. And then the body confuses self with other. That is the basis. It's a basic problem that can and does result in autoimmunity. It's just a matter of scale and exact manifestation. The other problem is, of course, if the body doesn't deal with it well and it enters the blood-brain barrier, how long does it take to get out if it's able to get out? Because you now have heavy metal adjuvants, nanoparticles in the brain. So does it cause autism? Of course it doesn't, quote unquote. But it has a tendency towards. It's heavy metals in the brain, folks. So it's a matter of degree and manifestation. Anybody who says it does not, first of all, is missing the point of whether it has the tendency towards creating it. And second of all, is telling you only a partial story. No, because it can never build up enough. Well, really? Because you have other articles talking about graphene oxide and other things as an overwhelmingly more prevalent toxin in the environment for any number of reasons. So this is what they do. They say, well, if you look at it and think about the life exposure, but they look at it only from that source, right? So if they're talking about the vaccines, they say, yeah, but the life exposure would only be blah, 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 blah. And even then they might go only that vaccine. Now that one, I'm not sure of. There are different studies that would go, what about from all sources? All right. And that's what they'll ignore, even as toxicological studies will talk about all sources and say, yeah, it's a looming disaster. And yet here we are. It's not just that nanoparticles are looming disasters as pollutants, but that we specifically put them in medicines that are supposed to help us. So let's tie this antidepressant and other drugs. I'm not going to tie them all together right now. I've done that before and the episode failed and I didn't upload it. So let's tie to antidepressants and autoimmunity and then hypothyroidism. Well, we have in hypothyroidism many an article, some even back in the late 80s, because it seems as though adjuvants have long been nanoparticles. They were just less refined nanoparticles. They were more simply refined nanoparticles. You know, you put some material in some kind of a solution, and therefore what you get as a chemical reaction or as a result of putting it in this kind of solution is a nanoparticle, as opposed to specifically nano engineering the surface properties. So adjuvants and other nanoparticles have been in medicine and some medicine for some time. And specifically in antidepressants, these SSRIs. So what do you see when you look at hypothyroidism? You see articles, even old ones, that say it's a highly prevalent situation for women compared to men. Oh, and by the way, guess what's also much more prevalent for women compared to men? Taking antidepressants. Well, guess what one of the major antidepressants are? SSRIs. Guess what they use? Nanoparticle carriers. That's how they get into the blood-brain barrier. And so you have an autoimmune disease, some of which is called drug-induced autoimmune diseases. There's drug-induced lupus, for instance. Well, let's just connect the dots, obviously. The drug-induced lupus is because of the nanoparticle carriers. So you have all kinds of autoimmune diseases. And the question is, how many autoimmune diseases are because people are taking a lot of medications and nanoparticles are a part of a lot of medications? The answer is some decent chunk. Like if you look at hypothyroidism, you'll see that even older articles where they say, well, 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by an autoimmune disease, specifically Hashimoto's disease. Do you hear me now? 90% of hypothyroidism, which is now epidemic and causes mass health problems in women especially, but it's going to get bigger and bigger because more and more men are taking antidepressants. 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's disease. Now, what did I just tell you? SSRIs use nanoparticles. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors use nanoparticles so that the drug can get into the blood-brain barrier. In big pharma science, the fact that you can get through the blood-brain barrier, an incredibly important barrier to separate your brain from everything else, the fact that you can get through it is considered a good thing. And when you get through it, it's supposedly good that you can keep serotonin from being uptaked in its regular cadence. So we know that that results in autoimmune. There are articles on it. And now we know that a majority of autoimmune hypothyroidism is due to autoimmune. Now, what's our final connection? And I guarantee you, you ask five people you know that this stands for, and almost for all of them, this is going to happen. Okay, if we know that selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are nanoparticle-based, and those therefore can create autoimmune problems, because they can, and those are antidepressants, does that mean long-term antidepressant use is tied to autoimmune diseases? It is. All right? It is. But then after that, then, what about hypothyroidism, which we didn't hear about 20 years ago? And now every fifth woman, it seems like, has hypothyroidism. Now, remember, that doesn't mean there's not a lot of other toxicological problems that might create hypothyroidism too. But this is one of them. And this is a missing piece. Guys, you listen to this podcast for a reason, and this is one of them. When people go, oh, well, you know, hypothyroidism's tricky, that. And nobody ever makes the connections. If you take selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and generally drugs, prescription drugs, you are more likely to have autoimmune disease, and it's not even close. And if you take antidepressants, the longer you take them, the more likely you are to have hypothyroidism. Which, guess what the solution is for? It's literally that Pfizer circle of hell you may have seen on social media. The solution is, oh, well, hypothyroidism means your body's not creating as much of the thyroid factor. I'm not necessarily using the technical term there, but basically the thing it needs to create in order for your body to be at the proper activity in that for what thyroid activates. And so because it doesn't, let's give it synthetic thyroid. And once you do, you're going to have to take this the rest of your life. So literally the cause are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors causing autoimmune diseases. A major cause of the hypothyroidism is Hashimoto's disease, an autoimmune disease, which is probably created by the SSRIs. And now here's what I want you to ask. It's only anecdotal a little bit, but all the articles back it up. It's that very few of them just bother to say this is the reason. You can find all the articles that connect A, B, C, D, but none of them go A to D, therefore, or not many of them. How many women do you know, anybody, but especially women, who have taken antidepressants? Now, how many of them have some kind of autoimmune disease? Now, that can be in any number of things, but to me, these autoimmune is going to potentially manifest if you've taken them long enough in more than one way. So one person I know has a major skin problem, and it has been diagnosed as autoimmune. Okay, the body not knowing itself from other. And this person has taken antidepressants for 25 years, give or take, since the late 90s. And guess what she has besides autoimmune? She has bum-ba-dum-bump hypothyroidism. I ask another person who's taken antidepressants for only took it for a year and a half or two. And guess what she has? Hypothyroidism. And I think I asked a third person I brought it up. I think it was maybe a friend of theirs said the same thing. Antidepressants, autoimmune, and hypothyroidism. So that's where I am, guys. And it's just very, very... You know, it's difficult. It's just so much to kind of take in and go, I know that pharmacological science is really just becomes marketing excuses to make supposed connections.
and just damn all other side effects. That's not their point. They don't care about the whole picture. They've never cared about the holistic picture. One thing I will add is this, something that we've touched on over and over again. They make these very ridiculous and short-sighted and narrow connections to make the argument that you should want to take these only because our system does not require them showing more effectiveness than anything else in order to charge a lot. And that's the problem. If we took away that incentive and whatever garbage they want to put out, it hasn't really been shown to be any more effective than getting out in the sun. I mean, they would never compare that, unfortunately. But something simple like a supplement, then they don't get to charge more than the supplement. But because instead our system stupidly incentivizes with whatever you feel like is the big tech and you think you can bill, if you can make the argument big enough, if you can make enough marketing brochures and make the marketing seem big enough and make the big flourish and the, oh my gosh, it's amazing, big enough that you can then say, and therefore we should charge $10,000 per dose. Then you get to, and Medicaid or Medicare has to pay that much. And that drives insurance premiums. It drives insurance payments. Without that, none of this junk might happen, but it wouldn't be to anywhere near the extent. So guys, that's unfortunately what I've been thinking about. And it's why it's like, you know what, time to peel off the scab and just start talking again. And I have looked up all the articles, but whenever I try to piece it together exactly article by article, I've created something and then I'm too worried about being exactly right with every single article. Those are the broad strokes, and all of that is in the literature. All of it is in the literature. Adjuvants created related to autoimmunity. The reason adjuvants are related to autoimmunity because of how they bind to the cells. The nanoparticle size being the reason something can pass the blood-brain barrier. The nanoparticles being specifically highly, highly toxic when looked at only as a toxicological situation. But when looked at as drug carriers for whatever reason, then that becomes a good thing because it can deliver a payload, quote unquote. And the adjuvant effect, after all, is supposedly important because you've got to trigger the immune system generally. So all that's in the literature, as well as that adjuvants, therefore nanoparticle materials being related to autoimmune disease, all that's in the literature of many autoimmune problems being based on drugs, such that there are terms such as drug-induced lupus, all admitted. And then admitted are autoimmune disorders being very much tied to, or rather, I mean, hypothyroidism being very much associated with autoimmune. We are creating a toxicological disaster in the populace under the guise of helping you feel better. But remember, it doesn't make your brain work better. If we did not have the incentives, we would be back to taking generally good things for your health. Those things that are generally good for your health don't cross the blood-brain barrier in a disastrous way. Those things generally good for your health don't build up heavy metals in your freaking brain or in your body. Those things good for your health are not nanoscale blades, which is exactly what graphene oxide is described as, that can then violate the integrity of your cells because it literally cuts into your cells, including the nucleus. Those things, naturally good for your health, don't chop through your blood vessels because they're nanoscale razor blades that are one atom thick, 50 nanometers wide, 200 nanometers long, and as rigid as can be. Things that are natural don't chop through your blood vessels, creating blood clots all over the place, like graphene oxide is. And yet you do see the literature saying graphene oxide, an awful potential toxicological disaster, and also a great drug carrier. Also, potentially a great adjuvant for vaccines. You do see in the literature, or in this case, it's not the literature, Pfizer saying, oh, we don't use graphene oxide. Look in the ingredients list. Yeah, some vaccines do, but we don't. Wait, what vaccines do? No one's admitted that. So the likelihood there that you don't quite see in the literature, but it's all but basically admitted. And then you go, do they just study it once in a while as possibilities, but never admit that they're doing it? Is that graphene oxide is the nanoparticle carrier for the messenger RNA medicine that they now get to call vaccine? The messenger RNA, prior to COVID, messenger RNA on a nanoscale carrier is discussed as regular medicine. Whether or not it's a good idea there is another whole question. But now it's, you know, well, it could be an adjuvant, maybe. Maybe we can use it as an adjuvant. Pfizer says it's not in ours. Look at the ingredients list. Pfizer also says, and others say, oh, no. A messenger RNA doesn't need an adjuvant. What do you mean it doesn't need an adjuvant? All vaccines have adjuvants. Are they not calling it an adjuvant because they're using it as the carrier for the messenger RNA that has to be stuck on something? And then when it is the carrier, it gets the biological corona around it. Well, messenger RNA is described over and over again as, hey, so we couldn't get it into the body easy. It's hard to deliver. But now we've got it protected by nanolipids. Well, what do you get with a biological corona with any nanoparticle? You get a biological corona of a nanoparticle size that is lipids that the body puts around it. It looks a lot like, wait for it. COVID-19 spike proteins, corona, thus coronavirus. Again, I'm not going to make that connection necessarily. You can consider it. But the point is, it sure seems like they probably used a nanoparticle carrier for the messenger RNA, which ends up being the same situation I'm telling you about. These highly toxic adjuvant things that are used as other drug carriers, because wisdom be damned, whole picture be damned. And then when spectroscopy says, it looks like this might be 99% graphene oxide. Well, it's not out of the question. They just simply say it's not a part of the ingredients. But they also say they don't need an adjuvant. Well, what do you mean you don't need an adjuvant? Is it that when it's a part of the basic fundamental nanocarrier, they don't have to call it an ingredient? Is that what's going on here? Possibly. Because every vaccine has an adjuvant until now. So if spectroscopy is showing it at 90 or 99% of graphene oxide, is that really the carrier? And if so, it's a really stupid carrier, but it doesn't mean they're not doing it. I just told you they talked about graphene oxide and similar as a potential adjuvant in 2020, mid-2020. I told you Pfizer says, hey, it's in some vaccines, but not ours. But then you go, well, what the hell is your adjuvant? Oh, we don't need an adjuvant. You don't need an adjuvant. Since when don't you need an adjuvant? And then you have all these related nanoparticles are drug carriers. So it's everywhere. The toxicity of these nanoparticles and how much your body does not want them is everywhere. And all over drugs. Now, over-the-counter, I'm not sure of. You can find articles that list all the various types of drugs that have nanoparticles. It's a lot. A lot of nanoparticles are used for a lot of drugs, but I'm not going to name them all here. And so, and remember then, oh, and the less your body deals with it, we don't say the body deals with a toxic nanoparticle worse. No. We say, oh, it can deliver the drug better. And so you get all kinds of buildup in confusion of self with other of the immune system. You get autoimmune diseases, therefore. You have things crossing the blood-brain barrier that should not be crossing the blood-brain barrier because that's there for a very specific purpose. And instead, you have nanoparticles, the nanoparticle aspect being why it is able to cross the blood-brain barrier. That is why the drugs are, quote, transported, are carried to, quote, where they are needed. It's bad. Guys, it's very, very bad. And I sat on this information for about 3 weeks as I went, oh my gosh, Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's up there and maybe worse than the glyphosate. The glyphosate episode, if you want to see it, is very, very, you know, to brass tacks as far as citations. It lays it out in a chronological form in all the logic you possibly need, including, you know, approval boards going, yeah, you probably shouldn't approve that. And then they go, but we're going to. It lays out all the various lawsuits against it and so on. So that's a big one. This is, might be bigger because it's specifically polluting our internal body with alleged treatment that causes massive side effects. It's not side effects. Always understand that side effects are what they call something that might be just as big of an effect or worse, but it's not the marketed effect. Okay, later on when they use the same drug for something else, they'll call another effect the primary effect, and it won't be called the side effect anymore. And if they make the just logical connection of, well, no, we don't know that the end result necessarily happens, but the argument is that we affect this, then the end result will be better. So we'll affect this, and who knows what the hell else it causes. After all, yeah, serotonin, oh, we had no idea it affected the immune system. Who knew? Yeah, well, it does. Why aren't you stopping? Because we've already started. Why would we stop it when we've already started? We'll just come up with another drug that affects the side effect. Oh, so now does your body move tardive dyskinesia or whatever it's called? Does your body have uncontrollable shaking when you take your antidepressants? That feels like a major problem to me. Well, don't stop taking your antidepressants because they're, quote, making you feel better through the placebo effect probably, but maybe not entirely. But yeah, you'll just take another drug for tardive dyskinesia. But don't you worry about how you're literally your body's signaling systems are not working well. Literally, your synapses and your body and muscular signaling is being entirely screwed up and short-circuited and gets the wrong signals for your freaking muscles to work right. Don't stop taking the toxicity that's screwing up whether your body is even firing off its muscles correctly. No, no, definitely continue to take that toxic treatment forever and ever and always. But then also take this one. Yeah, so we'll block another thing. We'll make your muscles work even less. Now, I don't listen to those side effects, but I guarantee you it's going to be something like muscle weakness and a lack of control or other things like that. Oh, and yeah, you know how when you take your selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and therefore you get autoimmune disease and therefore you get hypothyroidism, don't you worry about the hypothyroidism. Because don't worry, we'll give you the fake thyroid factor, and then you'll have to take that for the rest of your life. But don't you worry about side effects, because you can be assured that our synthetic is just as good as a natural. Because after all, we're the ones who didn't even f***ing remember or bother to notice that serotonin had anything with autoimmunity. So surely if we say the synthetic's just as good and does everything that the natural thyroid would do, it must be that we've done all of our homework. Surely it's the exact same thing and there's no side effects when your body stops creating thyroid factor, which is pretty important. You'll get fat because of it. All your general metabolism is affected. Your general metabolism is not just whether or not you get fat, but any number of things. But don't you worry. If you take the synthetic thyroid factor, then we get the number that we're measuring where we want it. And that's the important thing. Hey, if we can get your car to still go 70 miles an hour, never mind the fact that the only reason we got it going 70 miles an hour after the engine is running like crap is because we stuck a Wile E. Coyote rocket on the back of it, then hey, we got it to 70 miles an hour. So just you look at that speedometer. That's the important thing. Guys, the lack of wisdom, the lack of holistic looks at the body due to the incentive that we create where we don't care about whether the result is any more effective, let alone 10 times more effective if we're going to charge 10 times more. We don't care if we charge 1,000 times more, whether or not it's 1,000 times more effective. It can only be in the approximate range of as effective as something that's 60 cents. That incentive is driving madness. That incentive is driving quacks like Dr. Fauci. I'll tell you another thing. I've got a book called Why We Will Never Win the War on AIDS, which is how I knew Fauci was a demon from back in that day. And even back then, this is so funny. You have National Academy of Science early inductee Peter Duesberg, a true scientist. And he's going to go, he goes on with issues with why you're giving AZT a general toxin to people as treatment, a general major toxin, something that shuts down the immune system. Why are you giving AZT as a treatment? Well, guess what was happening? Whenever he would want to appear on media, he would get shut down. And guess who would appear in his place? Demon Fierci, Fauci. This has been doing it for 30 years. And so early on, where we went off the rails was when the regulatory agencies are supposed to direct and drive a reaction, as opposed to just generally being ensuring that people's discussions are in the approximate right framework and that things are safe. Once the regulatory agencies drive what we do in a particular scenario, then you get things like Fauci not being hung by a tree. And that's where we end up going off the rails. And it started way back in the late 80s and early 90s when a real scientist, see McCullough, see Malone, said, yeah, so this is a major problem. Here's why. And when, except it wasn't them, it was, although, you know, Kerry Mullis was around, the PCR guy. And that was another little excuse they used back during the alleged AZT situation, rather HIV, the PCR testing. And so when people like that want to appear, oh, no, we can't have that. And Fauci gets to take their time instead. Do you see that? Do you see that even then, in the late 80s and early 90s, this suppression and then managing of the message was starting to happen with the same demon worthy of a hanging tree, of course, by due process through a jury. Of course, nobody should ever, you know, take justice into their own hands. But that same demon worthy of a hanging tree, first due to the effects of many, many people with, quote, AIDS through a PCR positive, even though they felt good, having an untold amount of collective misery by taking as a preventative and a general toxin that then mimicked the disease itself by destroying the immune system. The same 30 years later gets to take over and does the same thing. Massage the coverage. Get to take over time when someone else was going to talk about it to provide further context. The same is still around and doing the same bullshit. But worse, guys, it's this route that we've gone down that I've discussed where we now have general toxins deliberately put into medications and in the context, in the very narrow context, we refer to that as a good thing and act like we don't know the big picture. Well, all we're doing is trying to deliver the drug effectively. But it's toxic. It creates autoimmunity. It creates hypothyroidism, both of which are massive effects supposedly to make somebody feel better. Well, how good do you think they're feeling when they start having a bunch of skin conditions? You think people prone to depression, getting autoimmune diseases like they've got bad skin conditions. You don't think that affects their mood, and that's a countering effect of whether the thing's worth it to begin with? You don't think that when people get hypothyroidism and start to have all kinds of symptoms, including weight gain, that affects their mood? Oh, no, ignore all that. Yeah, it's just insane. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Hopefully this kind of gets me going on uncovering my stuff again. I'd done really well in 2022 so far, providing some content. There's definitely a lot of things out there, the Ukraine thing and other things going on as far as whether justice was about to start happening with a lot of folks who are lying through their teeth and ruining countries and ruining economies and making traditions of freedom disappear based on reactions that did not have good scientific basis. And justice was going to come to roost, and then we get a bunch more distractions. So there are a lot more things to talk about. I do want to cover those, but I was really just kind of lonely in one spot with this just awful news of this, me always being paranoid and suspicious of Big Pharma because of what I know, because AZT, because of all these side effects that they ignore, you know, all of these just 2 + 2 = 4 Orwellian commercials that will tell you how great it is and show a sunset and then have 50 important side effects just listed off. No problem. And then things like FDA advisory boards going, yeah, you shouldn't approve that. And then they go, and we approve it. No, well, like none of us wanted you to approve it. None of us. And it's approved. And then people not going to jail after it was, I can't remember, either McCulloch or Malone talking about the diet drug, maybe. I can't remember if it was a diet drug, but that where, you know, I mean, they got fined in the range of $5 billion. No, more than that. And it literally cost, I think, thousands of lives. And yet not one person goes to prison, not one. Because we get to say, oh, well, the intent is that, don't worry about it, it's the intent. We didn't mean to do any of it. Well, what about involuntary manslaughter? Are we ever going to put any of these people in prison? Ever? Because I'm telling you, I've said this on Chemology a few times. When one CEO who feels like they cannot be touched, the one time one or two CEOs go into prison and have to think about Shawshank Redemption type nightmares, guess what they're less likely to do? They're less likely to go, whatever, our marketing thing is what's important. Who cares if anybody's damaged in the end? We'll never truly be punished. And even if we are, we've made $25 billion and we only have to pay back $5. Who cares? We're untouchable. As soon as they're not untouchable, and as individual humans have the nightmare of a Shawshank Redemption shower scene, then guess what? People are going to start to behave. But it just keeps not happening. And that's in regards to Big Pharma and massive issues. It's in regards to COVID overreactions, causing fortunes to disappear, causing businesses to shut down, causing freedoms to go away because they're being cocky with their deceptive presentations of facts and go, whatever, we're the ones leading this deal. When a few of those people go to prison, when justice comes to roost, the rest of them are going to start thinking a little bit further instead of being so deceptive. But until we get there, we will have either a Big Pharma tyranny, maybe, maybe not. But it has happened. We've seen it happen. So will it continue to happen is the question. Will it just happen every single time they want to? Oh, well, we've got some of our freedom bank. It feels better until the next time it happens. And they censor again and say, no, 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 no. Fauci gets to speak. You don't get to speak. Fauci's science. You don't get to speak. But whether or not we have Big Pharma tyranny, what we will have, unless and until Big Pharma CEOs and the like have to worry about a Shawshank Redemption shower scene, and that's all it will take to stop this. All it will take. Until they worry about that, we will have pharmacological, we will have pharmaceuticals that are incredibly toxic, that will continue to toxify the population who are under the idea that they are being treated. Not good. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyson Hartley. Thanks for listening to The Scales of Truth. You can catch me over on Chemology 411.